Ladies and gentlemen, jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Doug is at his daughter's wedding. So we're going to have a great show tonight. We have five guests lined up. We have Chuck Baldwin coming on from 7 to 7:30, who's one of my all-time favorite people on the planet. We also have Daniel Lisk, dark journalist, coming on from 7:30 to 8. Sheila Zielinski coming on from 8 to 8:30. Paul Williams from Operation Gladio, who wrote the book, The Unholy Alliance Between the CIA, the Vatican, and the Mafia. He's coming on from 8:30 to 9. He's also a brilliant, brilliant man. And then Dane Whittington's coming on from 9 to 9:30. And he'll be talking about what's going on with geoengineering around the planet and what's going on with these horrible fires we're having out west. Sheila will be covering stuff with the NFL and a bunch of other topics. So I just want to get started with you guys right now tonight. So you guys stay tuned. At the end of the last 30 minutes, I'm going to give myself a summary of all of the guests we've had tonight. And we're going to take some notes and we're going to kind of cover it all in detail and kind of give you guys the cliff notes at the end. So, Pastor Baldwin, are you on with me?
I am, Ted. Good to see you.
Oh, thank you, Chuck, so much for coming on. I'm going to start off. You've got two or three really incredible newsletters that you've put out, and we'll give out your website here. Give your website out right now, Chuck. I want to make sure I don't cut you off short on this. What's your website? How can people hear you and listen to you and read your columns?
Yeah, thank you, Ted. It's Chuck Baldwin Live, all one word, ChuckBaldwinLive.com.
ChuckBaldwinLive.com. Now, you made a comment in one of the emails that you sent out, one of the letters you made, and I want to start with this because I know this will crank up our audience and crank you up. You said, quote, "The answer is not gun control. The answer is for America's pastors to stop play-acting in the pulpit, stop worrying about offending people, stop following these prosperity preachers, and start being the courageous prophets to the nation they should have been all along." Now, I'm 100% in agreement with that entire statement. Now, I sent this to a couple of my pastor friends, and I had mixed response with it. I'm going to give you some of the responses that we had. Someone said, don't attack prosperity because you're offended at some of these preachers. And my response was, well, I like Chuck Baldwin. He has a lot of testosterone. I said, but he's a patriot, and he's a gun guy, and so I like the column and what he said. And then he went on to say a few other things about the column. And then I said, look, even if I agree with Chuck on 90 or 95% of the items that we talk about in the columns, he's still a patriot and he still gets an A in my book. And I said, prosperity preaching is great as long as it's balanced with action. Most prosperity preachers don't balance anything. Chuck is right about that. But they're too afraid to offend their crowds and lose crowds as far as not having as big an offering. And I started talking about how you have to balance all of this stuff with the both verbal and tangible. And then we bring up a pastor who's a nationally known TV evangelist who has a huge footprint. And I said to him, I said, the problem is he refuses to cover controversial issues and he cops out by saying it's not his calling. I said, his message is not balanced. I said, preachers are called to preach, not to compromise. And I said, and he says, but he's doing a good work. And I said, well, I agree he's getting people saved. And I said, I agree with that, but I disagree with his compromise. I've never heard him discuss sin, such as gays, abortion, promiscuity, government problems, etc., not once. And I said, I disagree with you on this topic. I said, he needs to balance out his sermons. If he wants to be a motivational speaker, that's one thing, but he doesn't need to be calling himself a pastor if he's not going to preach the Word of God. What do you think about my response, and what do you think about other people and how they feel about that particular column that you wrote, Chuck?
Well, Ted, I agree with what you said. It's a shame that pastors from all denominations, regardless of what side of the denominational aisle they're coming from, are virtually silent in the pulpit relative to the issues that are affecting our country, whether they're prosperity preachers or not. It really doesn't matter what they call themselves. The bottom line is, there's over 300,000 evangelical churches in this country. That means there's over 300,000 pastors, not to mention the hundreds of thousands of evangelists and TV preachers and radio preachers and all other kinds of men of God that are promoting the Word of God. Wait, stop and think about the combined audience of that number of preachers in this country. I mean, just think about it. There is no other medium in the country that can come close to the captive audience that they have every Sunday or whenever they meet in the churches and the various religious institutions of our country. And the vast majority of them are saying nothing about the salient issues affecting the liberties, the constitutional government, and the future of our country. They refuse to deal with these issues for several reasons, in my view, and I've been a pastor for over 40 years, and I pastored a 501c3 church for 35 of those years, so I know what that's all about. And I think that the fear of the Internal Revenue Service and the loss of their tax exemption via the 501c3 nonprofit status, and the fear of losing contributors and donors, tithers, to their ministry is what's driving their silence. And I think it's time that preachers be like God intended them to be. You go to the preachers of both Testaments, old and new, and what do you find? You find courageous men that challenged the systems of government and religion. Jesus himself constantly challenged the religious system, which was controlled by the Pharisees and Sadducees, etc., as well as the governmental structure of his day. You cannot possibly understand the gospel narratives in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John without understanding this contest between Jesus and the Pharisees. And, of course, I've written on that, and I have DVDs on that. But the point is, throughout the Bible, men of God were courageous, bold champions of truth. They feared not men. They feared not government. They feared not power. They feared not poverty. They spoke the truth to power. They spoke the truth to people. And they changed the world in which they lived. Today, we have a cowardly pulpit that is unwilling to address the issues. Ted, one more thought. If the preachers of colonial America in 1775 and 76, of all denominations, acted as the preachers of America do today, we would still be a crown colony of Great Britain. There'd have been no Bunker Hill, there'd have been no Declaration, there'd have been no Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, there'd have been April 19, 1775, and the shot fired heard around the world. There'd have been none of that if the colonial pastors did not have the courage to give their people the truth relative to the Bible, to natural law, to the principles of liberty and tyranny, how to identify it, how to deal with it, etc. The preachers were as much responsible for the inception of this country as were the political patriots of that era.
No, you're absolutely right, Chuck. You know, I told you in that little thing that I read at the beginning of the show there where I was having my little little argument with the other pastor. I said, I give you an A in what you believe. What do you give Donald Trump right now? What kind of grade do you give Donald Trump for what he's done since he took office, Chuck?
Well, I give him about a C minus or a D plus. I'm not impressed with him. He has reneged on just about everything that he said on the campaign trail, and I mean on major issues. And at this point, I don't trust him. And I don't think he's going to follow through with anything he said on the campaign trail. And so I'm very disappointed in Donald Trump.
Well, you know, I had Dave Hodges on my show earlier today, my 3 to 4 o'clock show here on the same network on Global Star. And I asked Dave, I said, how much power does Trump really have? How much does Trump really control? And he goes, well, to be honest with you, Ted, because of the deep state, he doesn't control much. And I thought, wow, so he's more of a figurehead right now. Tell me about the problems that we've had out here trying to get the truth right now with Vegas, Chuck. Tell me your take on that entire situation, and what do you think the truth is?
Boy, I know you're referring to my last two columns, including the one that went out yesterday.
Yes.
And I've delved into this extensively, and I've tried to be as accurate as I could in the two columns that I wrote. You know, the only thing I can say conclusively from a personal point of view at this point is that I am absolutely convinced that the official narrative is a bunch of bunk. I do believe that there were multiple shooters. There's just no way in this world, in my opinion, that Stephen Paddock, this 64-year-old man who was never military trained, and that he could have pulled off what he did, and the amount of carnage and death and so forth, and how he was able to do it in the time that they say that he did it, etc. In my view, there's just nothing about the official story that adds up, and the only thing that makes sense to me is there had to be multiple shooters.
No, that's the only thing that makes any sense. In fact, today I discussed this at length with Dave Hodges. Yesterday I discussed it at length with Robert Steele, and we compared notes on today's show with Dave, and he really feels the deep state is heavily involved in this, and so does Robert Steele, including the CIA, the Mossad, the FBI, the same old, same people who are always involved with everything. So let me ask you a couple questions here. I had another one of my friends today. After I sent out your column and a bunch of other stuff that I sent on what happened in Vegas, I've known this guy for 20 years, and he's on my personal email list. So he gets like, you know, a dozen or so emails from me every single day and a lot of news sources. And he basically contacted me today and says, please remove me off of your email list. And I said, he's a Christian. And I mean, this is the first time that, you know, we've had a guy that I've known for 20 years actually say this to me. And he said that, you know, he doesn't really know what to make of any of this stuff, but he doesn't want to have to try to deal with the alternative theory. So he sent me an article that he thought I should read. And I'm going to do this for him. I'm going to let you go and kind of go through it with me, because it's kind of silly. Because it's real, I can't believe this guy is this liberal, because they don't want to believe the truth. And he goes, number one thing they say is, what is the motivation of the website from which I'm getting the information? Well, I know with your website, Dave Hodges' website, and the other websites like Hagman & Hagman, we have no ulterior motivation. We're not trying to sell anybody on the idea that this was an inside job. We're just reporting the facts back and forth. What do you think about that? Why do you think so many people want to down certain websites and try to say they're fake news, Pastor?
I do, and I think the reason is, I think the reason why these neocon conservatives, and especially these pastors and Christians who refuse to deal with reality, I really think it's because they do not want the personal responsibility that would follow if they admit some of the things that we're talking about are true.
That's right.
If they admit to themselves that there's corruption, there's dishonesty, there is illegality going on in our government, that there is we keep calling it deep state now, but that there is a dark side of government that is operating outside of the law, outside the Constitution, outside of the Congress, outside the people, that they are doing at will some of the most heinous acts of violence known to mankind. And it's all done under the cover of government. If people in the pulpit, in the pews, and these other people that call themselves patriot conservatives, etc., if they admit that these kind of things are even possible, that's a possibility that this could be a black ops or dark ops, actually government operation. You just mentioned CIA. Ted, in my opinion, there's only three institutions in the world, if there's multiple shooters, there's only three institutions in the world that could do what was done in Las Vegas and get by with it. By that I mean you leave behind a dead body as the patsy to put all the blame on, and the other shooters get away scot-free. No trace and no shadow, and nobody in law enforcement is even looking for them. There's only three institutions that could do that inside the continental United States. Now, when you go outside around the world, the other countries, no, there's more nations that could get away with it. Inside the continental United States, there's only three institutions that can get away with this: America's CIA, British MI6, and Israeli Mossad. Those are the only three institutions that have the resources, the capability, the wherewithal, the personnel, etc., to not only commit the acts, but then to disappear as if they were never there. They're the only ones that could do that. And if you talk to the average pastor, like your friend that says, don't send me more emails after 20 years of friendship, believe me, I've had a lot of people of 25, 30 years of friendship that have totally cut me off. And I believe the reason is, the number one reason, I've analyzed this, I've agonized over this. Why? Why are they so reticent? Why are they so hesitant to deal with these issues? And I really come back to that statement. They don't want the accountability and the responsibility of personally having to do something, having to say something, having to make a difference, because if they admit these things to themselves, they know in their hearts they do have to say something, they do have a responsibility, and they're not willing to man up. That's my opinion, Ted.
That's excellent. I remember years ago, Chuck, I was teaching a health class at Carpenter's Home Church in Lakeland, Florida, and I remember there was a couple that came to two or three of the lectures that we did. We did them 4 years there. And finally, they quit showing up after two or three, and I saw them in the parking lot one day. And I said, why have you quit coming to the health lectures? And they said, well, the problem is, Ted, to those who know to do something is right, and they don't do it, to them it's a sin. And quite frankly, you're teaching us all of this stuff about health and how we're supposed to eat properly, but we don't want to really do all of that, so we don't want to know about it, because that way it's easier not to do it. And that's exactly what you're saying right now. It's easier not to know the truth and continue to stick your head in the sand and pretend like it's not going to happen. Now, next comment on this website. How did the participants in this giant government conspiracy operate and benefit? Now, that's a good one. I like that one.
How did they benefit? How did they operate? Well, you never know how they operate, because that's what they do. I mean, here's the thing. Our CIA, British MI6, Israeli Mossad, have been conducting these kind of killings and assassinations and bombings and drone attacks and all kinds of mayhem and disaster for decades all over the world. This is everyday activity for these organizations. I mean, the problem is now then it's starting to happen inside the United States. And so now people are acting like, this has never happened before. You know, this is brand new. Why did this happen? If they would get their eyes out of the sand, if they would start reading some of the independent news sources, if they would start reading some of the foreign news sources. I mean, I scour as many foreign news sources as I do U.S. sources every day, because I found that, for the most part, the American media, including many of the conservative media, refuse to deal with a lot of things globally and internationally. So you have to go to the foreign media to find out a lot of this stuff. Of which I know you do and I do and a lot of these others, but I mean, the average person doesn't do that. But this kind of activity goes on all of the time, all over the world. So the fact that how they're doing it is, that, I mean, this is what they're trained to do. This is what they're skilled at it. They do it all the time. This is nothing new. The why part of it. Okay, what's the result of this? What is the result? Who's going to benefit? That's one of the first things you got to ask yourself. Who's going to benefit? Well, first of all, Michael Chertoff is going to benefit, and all these security peddlers that make billions of dollars promoting their security industry are going to make even more billions after this. Can you imagine what the Vegas casinos are going to look like 6 weeks from now, 2 months from now? I mean, it's going to be like boarding a commercial airliner to go to these casinos here in the very near future. Big cities all over America are going to start clamping down on security and major venues all over the country. It's going to be a dream world for the peddlers of the security industry. They're going to make billions and billions of dollars, so they profit. And then the security complex itself, the Department of Homeland Security and all these government security institutions, are going to just have heyday, because now we're going to see more and more rules and regulations. We're going to see more and more security measures. The police state is going to start clamping down even greater after this. This is what happened after, you know, 2001 and 9/11. We've been living in a burgeoning police state ever since. And every time you have a shooting like this, and this is the worst one so far, it won't be the last. It's the worst one so far. We're going to see more of the police state growing in this country. They're going to benefit. And then think about the loss of liberty. Think about the gun issue. I mean, they're already talking about banning the bump stock. Why doesn't somebody stand up on the wall of the House and say, you know what? The problem is we've got too many gun control laws on the books already. God-fearing, honest people are walking around unarmed because of the laws that we have enacted that have disarmed them, and they have become vulnerable to these potential killers, and therefore we need to give them the freedom that they used to have in this country to be able to arm themselves wherever they go, eliminate the gun-free zones, let the American people defend themselves wherever they go, take the gun control laws that are already on the books off the books. That's what should be done. But what are they doing? Even the White House, even Trump, even the Republicans are talking about, well, we're going to ban the bump stock. Ted, do you know that the guys who know what they're doing, I mean the gun guys that know what they're doing, can do the same thing that you can do with a bump stock with a stiff rubber band?
That's right.
I'm not kidding. Look it up on the internet if you don't believe me. You can do the same thing with a stiff rubber band. Okay, what are we going to do? We're going to ban rubber bands now? Right? This is lunacy. The problem is we have disarmed the American people. How many states, how many big cities have disarmed their people? They are absolutely defenseless in the face of assault. And, you know, instead of addressing the issue that the American people need to rearm themselves, I mean legally, and be able to bear their arms, carry their arms wherever they go, get rid of the gun-free zones, let teachers arm themselves, let government workers arm themselves, let the military people that are sitting at the induction centers and the career centers, let them arm, let everybody be an American free to defend themselves, which is the God-given duty that we have by our Creator. But instead, what are they doing? More gun control. We need more government. We need more security. We need more DHS. We need more tax dollars for our security system, for our police state, for our police agencies. We have so that we can continue to enslave the American people. This is the continuous results of these kind of activities, and it doesn't seem to matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican in the White House and which party controls Congress. That's who gains. So when you say, why, duh, the goal has always been to disarm the American people. The only reason the Western world is free today, in whatever degree they are, is because of the armed citizenry of the United States. It's not because of our military. It's not because of our Air Force and our Navy and our nuclear weapons and our military. No. The only reason the Western world is free is because of the private ownership of firearms, especially the military style AR-15 semi-automatic rifles and that caliber and grade of weapon. It's only because of the American people freely possessing those weapons that the Western world is free today. You disarm the American people, Ted, and we are going to go, I say we, the Western world will plunge into 500 years of tyranny. What's the goal? Why would they do it? Duh. See, first of all, you got to say to yourself, you know what? There is a conspiracy in people in government and business, and it's a global international effort to strip the American people of our guns, of our liberties, and to bring America into a New World Order globalist environment. There is a conspiracy to do that. I'm sorry, that's the word. It's a conspiracy to do that. And until people are willing to acknowledge that it exists, it's going to continue to exist because there's no one around to challenge it. So these guys that say, well, you know, who's going to gain? What's the benefit? Duh. I mean, how many times does this have to happen? And I guarantee you that if we don't start getting to the issue of, you know what, there is a dark side to government. There are people that are doing things illegally, unconstitutionally, immorally, viciously, violently, callously, taking the lives of innocent people. We've got to start looking at who they are, how they operate. Where's Congress? Why aren't they stepping up to the plate saying, wait a minute, we're supplying all these dollars, but we're not given an account as to what's going on. We don't
That's
even
right.
have a clue as to how the CIA, for example, is spending the dollars that we're giving them. And they don't. They don't have a clue.
Nope. Black ops. Black budget.
Without accountability, there is no freedom.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Chuck. The next thing he says to me goes, and this article says, it says, what law requires investigators to immediately release every video in their possession for public consumption? And my response is this. The FBI seized almost, in fact, all of the videos at 9/11 with the Pentagon being struck. We never, except for the Freedom of Information Act, we received like 5 frames, and these guys never give us the information that they receive because it's all part of a vast cover-up. We saw that with the JFK assassination. So one more time, Chuck, we're running pretty close to the bottom of the hour. Give out your website. How can people support your effort? How can they get in touch with you?
Thanks, Ed. Yeah, I got carried away there a little bit.
Oh, you were great. I loved it.
It's ChuckBaldwinLive.com. Chuck Baldwin, B-A-L-D-W-I-N, ChuckBaldwinLive.com. And they can find my column. It's up there right now, the one you're referring to. And, of course, I've got messages on this that are also on DVD that are available. They go up to the store, and you'll see all of the DVDs and the books and so forth that we have available. And my columns can be sent free of charge to anybody that would like to have them, Ted. If they'll just sign up, there's a place where they can sign up to receive the columns via the email, and they'll get it in their email every Thursday, absolutely free. So if they want to do that, they can do that as well.
I want everybody to know that I've gone to Chuck's website, and I pretty much bought everything on the website. Chuck will tell you that. Pretty much everything. And I did. I just bought everything. You know, and I said, well, I'm going to support this guy. He's a good preacher. He's doing a good work. And I know that, you know, you're out there as a patriot, and it's all part of what we do together. Chuck, I got the music playing. We're going to break. God bless you, buddy. Thanks so much for being with me for the first part of the show.
God bless you. Thank you, Ted.
Bye-bye.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of 3 families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced, Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Perata's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
welcome back to the Hagman & Hagman Show. This, again, is Ted Brewer, your host for this evening. My next guest is the dark journalist, Daniel Litz. Amazing man. I've watched his videos for years and years and years. He has some of the best guests on alternative news on a regular basis. I absolutely love Catherine Austin Fitz and Elena Freeland, and his interviews are always succinct, to the point, and very, very professional. And Daniel, I appreciate what you've done, buddy, and you've done a lot. Tell everybody how they can get in touch with you and how they can sign up for your emails and how they can sign up for your broadcasts.
Well, thank you, Ted. I'm actually very aware of the work that you do as well, and I've always enjoyed it. I'm at darkjournalist.com, and anyone can sign up there for the newsletter and anything else that I do with the interviews. And I'm looking forward to speaking with you tonight.
Good. There's several things. There's so many things that you've talked about that I've listened to you with Catherine Austin Fitz and with Elena Freeland with the fence around the planet now, the space fence. But I'd like to talk about one thing about Catherine Austin Fitz, because we've talked about this before with the fallen angel thing or with the fallen DNA or whatever these other entities are that are on the planet. Tell us a little bit what you know about that, because, you know, we're a big promoter and we believe what happened in Genesis chapter 6 happened in Genesis chapter 6 with the fallen angels and these aliens or whatever you want to call them. I know you're a Christian, and I know, you know, you've been very open and very vocal about that, which we all love. So how do we reconcile all of this together with Christianity? And tell me a little bit about what Catherine Austin Fitz has talked about with the budget, the deficits, and also with Elena Freeland with the space fence. So that's what this interview is going to be about tonight, guys. This is going to be a hot 30 minutes. So, Daniel, go ahead and go where you want to start.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, somebody like Catherine Austin Fitz, who's the former assistant housing secretary under Bush 1 and also worked with HUD in the Clinton administration, she got to see it all up front because you know, she worked on Wall Street before that, so she kind of understood a lot going in. And when you have those types of skills coming in there and actually not going along with the game, you can see things from a perspective of where's the money going. And so she found out pretty quickly that there was a black budget operating through HUD. And if you think about it, I mean, HUD is an interesting place for that kind of transactions to go on, because HUD was set up under LBJ to, you know, kind of create a fair housing environment and funding for underprivileged families to be able to own their own homes. And but it's had a long jaded history. You might recall that even when Ben Carson got appointed under Trump, he interestingly enough, he instantly came out and said, "Oh, there's $600 million missing here." So, you know, HUD seems to have this kind of recurring problem where they don't know how to reconcile the money, and very often it's because the money and the kind of planning that goes on in something like HUD, it's easy for a group operating under black budget strategies to exploit it, because it's just the kind of place where you do it, as opposed to, you know, the Department of Defense, when people keep a closer eye on it. HUD is the kind of thing that really gets lost in the shuffle. So her go ahead.
She said one thing that I want to kind of emphasize. She said it was close. It was over $30 trillion, which had been kind of sucked up into this black budget. And then she said the other, another number she gave was $21 trillion here in one of your last interviews. Explain to us where all that money's gone, Daniel.
Yeah, well, the $21 trillion actually that she arrived at is the DOD with HUD. And if you count in the larger agencies, which she's had to forecast using a group of researchers, then the number gets higher. It gets up to around $40 trillion. But the actual kind of number that she focuses in on is this $21 trillion, because it's so easy for anyone to go in there and actually backtrack the paperwork for that. And that's the DOD and HUD. So that kind of money, you have to ask yourself, you know, it does a lot more than just buy these guys Ferraris or, you know, mansions on the hill. I mean, this is really enough money to set up a world endowment. And in this case, what we see happening to the money is that they've been working on plans, and one of those plans is the continuity of government plan. We've had that in place from the government since the 50s, and that's the kind of thing where they were planning for a nuclear strike during the Cold War with the Russians back then. So you could kind of legitimize the expense, and you could kind of legitimize the secrecy that was around it. But what happened was the people who were in charge of that basically decided to use it in a fashion where these deep state operators could exploit the money and could exploit the power of having this hidden system of finance in place. So it's a very tricky situation, because once we got into it, it was very, you know, it's impossible to get out unless transparency is brought. And you can see that from people from Kennedy all the way up to the Trump administration, it's very hard to bring transparency to this situation, because it's basically something like a functioning parallel government. And that's Professor Scott's term for it, was the deep state. And I think this is really an accurate term, because it's a separate state and it acts like a system. So when it needs something from the public state, it steps in and dramatic things happen when they need policy changes. So that would, you know, that's really who holds the power of those kind of train tracks or the black budget. What they're using it for in terms of space is, you know, we've had a program parallel to the public program for space, and the public program under NASA is supposed to be under civilian control, but ultimately answers to the military. And the secondary program had to be built up under covert means, because, you know, we're operating under treaties where we can't place offensive weapons in space. That's a treaty that we signed onto in 1968. So all of our activities in that department had to be clandestine or piggyback on other things that were happening. So when we look at programs, they put a program in place during the 80s, which was called Star Wars SDI, and the idea was we'll bring the Russians to the table because we'll be able to zap missiles from space. But another program that they started under the Reagan administration was called the Space Fence, and this was just set up to collect junk that had been placed in space and, you know, no longer was functioning, supposedly. So this is the ostensible purpose for the Space Fence. But over time, this program became kind of a backdoor for allocating black budget money to. And the installation of satellites that were going on, when they were putting this infrastructure up there in space, they were getting a lot of interference from other craft. So their initial thoughts, well, the Russians have something up there. Later on, it became what kind of a situation is this? And under the Reagan administration, there was actually a panic about it, where Reagan tried to get Gorbachev on board to keep an eye on these off-world craft with him, so that, and would they join up in the event of an alien invasion? So this was really something that they considered at a very high level.
Now, also, she says that there's another, how should I say, the different distinct DNA on the planet, and that these people are actually in charge. Tell us what she means by that when she says stuff like that.
Well, I think that there's things that, in terms of what Catherine will say, where she'll identify things that are speculation versus what she knows. And okay. So the budgetary stuff and things around the black budget funding for space, there's a long data trail for that. I think that the speculation has come up around intervention and interdimensional intervention by other beings and other realities. And it is fascinating, because we have a long history now, 70 years of UFO encounters by the military, by civilians, and nobody really knows what that is. And, you know, there's a supposition that the government knows what it is, and that they're hiding that reality. But the interesting thing about these different reports is the government at that level is so compartmentalized that, you know, talking about interdimensional beings or off-world civilizations, there's not going to be a regular representative for that. You're not going to find that in NASA, for example. But you will notice that if you go back earlier to like the 50s and 60s, when the military first had to talk about this publicly, they would say things like, yes, they are out there, but they don't pose any national security threat. This was very technical language, because if they posed a national security threat, then there'd have to be all this apparatus that was public about it. But if they don't, then they can keep it entirely as a covert program. And that's, you'll notice that language as it comes up is very interesting. It's an odd thing. On one hand, they're saying, yes, we see them too, but don't worry, they're not a threat. Later they changed and they just started to say, you know, it's the stuff of the Men in Black movies, or, you know, we get into this whole culture about ETs, and it's not really, it's kind of a promoted thing to get you thinking of it in fantastical terms. What the actual reality is very interesting, because nobody exactly knows what's going on. But if it were an earthbound civilization with those types of craft, obviously they'd be in a dominant position right now even.
Well, so you did a video, oh gosh, I listened to it a couple of weeks ago, you sent it out, and you actually summarized everything in about 13 to 15 minutes about what was going on, what you felt was, I mean, the stuff that could be documented.
Yes.
And I thought you did one of the best jobs I've ever heard on that. In fact, I listened to it two or three times, and I thought, wow, when I do the Hagman Show, I've got to get Daniel on. Would you like to go in a little bit more of that detail on that, or would you rather just talk about the space fence?
No, I'll give you the detail on that. I appreciate that. And, you know, it's great because SSP and COG, these are the acronyms that will really help us figure this out. And it is the summary of Catherine Austin Fitz, Dr. Joseph Farrell, and Professor Peter Del Scott's work in a nutshell. SSP is the secret space program, and COG is continuity of government. The continuity of government program was started with those underground bases because they thought there was the potential for a nuclear attack in the 50s. But that culture that grew up around it created a gigantic underground infrastructure, which is still largely secret. So we don't know what's going on down there, but they've been building it for over 70 years. Then, parallel with that, we get something which comes to be known as the Secret Space Program. And one of the reasons that we got kind of fuller documentation, fuller ideas about it, was that there was a NASA hacker who hacked into the Department of Defense.
That's right.
And he found, this is Gary McKinnon out in the UK, and he found an off-world officers list along with pictures of these craft. But the off-world officers list was the same way you would say like a Navy squad or an Air Force squad, but these were basically not astronauts, but they were, you know, meant as an officer list to go out into space. So it suggested this entirely different program that the public has no knowledge about but has funded up to this point. And when we look at the developments in space, it's very unusual because year after year, NASA has less and less of a budget. They've gone back to 1965 levels.
That's right.
And yet the privatization of space has taken off. So we have companies like Bigelow Aerospace, SpaceX, and they're preparing for all the opportunities that are up there. But then all that infrastructure that we've put together up there is now being privatized. So this is a question of where this missing money went to build this infrastructure in space, and who's going to get the benefit from it, not the taxpayers and the citizens who paid into it, but these private groups who were, you know, have close relationships with the government. So there's a profit corporate model that's in place there, and the space economy is something that can't be denied anymore. You know, even on MarketWatch and CNBC, they have to talk about it because right now, publicly, it's a $400 million a year business. So, you know, what's going to happen in the future? They have asteroid mining. These are the opportunities. They're going to have opportunities for space tourism and, you know, all of the things also that go in the lower atmosphere. Like right now we have GPS. They're going to enhance that dramatically. So everything really that's a growth industry, is going to be in space, because many of the resources on Earth, although they'll continue to grow in certain ways, they won't have the kind of clip that you get from an entirely new environment. So space and the space economy is something that we have to come to grips with now. But the question is, how did they get to that point? So the secret space program, if they were installing this infrastructure in space, and if programs like Star Wars SDI that Reagan put in place really became part of the infrastructure. You know, everyone assumes, well, after the Soviet Union fell and it was just the Russians and the Americans and the Berlin Wall was gone and all that, that SDI Star Wars went away. Well, they spent millions of dollars creating SDI Star Wars. They're not just going to forget about it. And obviously they continued that research and they brought it up to a level where it is now. The problem is the jump from the secret space program into the space fence, if we go to the work of Ilana Freeland, Now, Ilana studied things like chemtrails, like HARP, here on Earth. And the tie-in is that the atmosphere, it was necessary to ionize the atmosphere in order for the space fence to work.
That's right.
This is one of the things that they had going on in the 80s with Star Wars, is they could not get the space fence quite activated because they didn't have that ionization going. But now they have that type of technology, and even with programs like CERN, you know, we do see that they're entering into this fuller kind of dimensional technology. And it's, you know, CERN is under the guise of trying to find the Higgs boson, the God particle. This is what the scientists call it. And so the reason that's given for this huge budget around this thing, I mean, this is a non-defense project that's billed over $6 billion, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. But they're supposed to be finding this Higgs boson. So what happens, though, and it's been observed when CERN is turned on, is it has all these incredible effects around the globe, including pulling on the atmosphere, so, and the magnetosphere. So we have really a lot of scientific development that's happening among a very small elite group that's very well funded, and they are also kind of maintaining a regular secrecy around these projects. A lot of these things are done in plain sight, like CERN is a facility, you know, that's right out there in the open. But at the same time, the funding is very mysterious about it. And a lot of the legalities around CERN are also quite strange. So we start to see the infrastructure for these programs, like CERN and the Secret Space Program, come out of this secrecy. And so you ask yourself, well, how would they maintain that kind of secrecy just under national security and the national security state? And we go back to the COG program, because the COG program, the idea is survivability under nuclear attack conditions, so ultimate emergency. But they changed that, actually, interestingly enough, in the 50s, they had it as nuclear. By the 80s, they changed it to just any emergency. And so that brought the COG rules out into space. That's why they can have the ultimate secrecy in regards to space.
You know, Daniel, it's interesting because friends were asking me a few years ago when we put the shuttle mission to rest and we said it was no longer going to be used. I told them, I said, well, there's a reason for that. I said, it's a huge front, it's a smoke screen. I said, our technology is so beyond that. That's 1920s yeah. rocket technology. I said, this is silly that we're even using it. I said, it's just to obfuscate what's really going on in space. How far advanced do you think they are that they haven't revealed to us? 50 years, 100 years, 200 years? How far out are they on this breakaway civilization, so to speak, that's so advanced from a technological standpoint, Daniel?
Oh, that's an excellent point, actually, which is they're very far ahead. There is a story about a NASA scientist who was speaking with a researcher who was trying to get a handle on this. Now, this conversation took place in 2004, and it was that in 1964, they had double the processor speed that we had in our advanced personal computers. They had double the capacity for that 40 years earlier. So if we really extrapolate from that, that just in NASA at the time they were operating with, you know, that much better, and then we split it up by 40 years, we can see that we're really living in a completely different paradigm. These people are literally centuries ahead with their technology. Because the way technological development and science works is one guy proves something. You know, he comes out and, it's, say, in the field of medicine, and everyone piggybacks on the discovery that he makes. And if you don't get those breakthroughs, then your culture remains behind the curve. And, you know, you have kind of arrested development, which is why, you know, I was driving the other day and I was seeing this guy. He had an amazing media system in the top of his car. I mean, this guy could do anything. It looked like a control panel from Star Trek. And I was like, that's really futuristic, the way he's got that set up in there. And then I looked underneath the car, and here we had basically Henry Ford's steam engine, you know, chug-a-lug this stuff with gasoline. I mean, it didn't make any sense. And that kind of, if you look at it, the confusion between those two worlds, you know, how far behind we are because we're still in this oil paradigm, it makes you wonder just how many other advances that are being kept from us. And at this point, the evidence mounts that in everything from health, you know, we know a lot of cancer treatments have been suppressed, age extension technologies, all of these different areas. What you just referred to as the breakaway civilization, which, by the way, I think is the correct term, really, when you get right down to it. Because when you have different science and you have different technology and different medicine, ultimately, you're functioning as a totally different society. And, you know, in our civilization, we still have these kinds of limitations. We're talking about the environment, or we're talking about the effects of gas, you know, and cars and all these types of things. And those guys are way beyond questions like that. They've already figured out, they've gone into nanocomputing, they've gone into heavy-duty magnetic inventions that eliminate the need for, you know, combustion vehicles.
That's right.
So really, it is a tale of two civilizations. The question is really what the end game for the other civilization is, because the way it's been described is, you know, you have to imagine if a guy had a wife and then he had a whole second life and another family going on, and one of those wives knows about the other one, but the other one doesn't know about the first one. It's kind of a good description.
Well, let me ask you another question. I personally believe that we have advanced propulsion systems, and I know that one of the top guys, I believe it was from, you'll know his name, he said that we can take E.T. home now, and that
yes.
we have the ability. I mean, to tell us about that.
Well, it's a very interesting.
That was Kurzweil, wasn't it?
No, it's Ben Rich, actually.
Ben Rich, okay.
And he was the main guy at Skunk Works, which really is the most advanced testing that we had going on in relation to space. And, you know, his quote was very interesting because it's shortly before the end of his life, and he said, "We already have the ability to take E.T. home and back."
Right.
So, there are other cases, for example, when we brought over a lot of these Nazi scientists, and they worked with us closely in setting up NASA, because the Germans were so advanced on the space front compared to the Americans that without them we never would have gotten the space program. Unfortunately, you know, through that paperclip program, we also got a lot of hardcore Nazis into important positions.
That's right.
And I think we've been shaking out that influence ever since, including setting up the CIA, had a lot of Nazi influence as well.
That's right.
But sticking to Ben Rich's story, when we look at it, Wernher von Braun also, when he was talking with an American teacher who was assigned to him basically to learn about space, and it was this kind of civilian space cooperation thing, he said to her, you know, when she said, "How on earth did you ever get this far advanced in terms of the space program?" And he said, "We had help," which is very unusual because, you know, is he referring there to finding ancient technology? Is he referring to some other civilization helping out, interdimensional? What exactly was he referring to? But he certainly gave her the impression that he was talking about an off-world civilization. That was her impression, but we don't actually know exactly what he was referring to. I think there's enough stories like that to suggest that they have a greater knowledge, these people that are working at that level. And that's a very crucial kind of high level. And I think everyone who goes to those Davos meetings and the Bilderberg people, they all aspire to get into that level, because the technology ultimately is the biggest secret on that end of things. And then, you know, when you think about if they're aware of interdimensional realities and the types of influences that are going on there, then it becomes, you know, you start to understand and you say, oh, the secrecy is in place because, you know, they don't want people finding out what they're up to financially, technologically, and even spiritually.
You're right. Daniel, give me your information. You know, how people can contact you and listen to your shows.
Ted, I appreciate it, and it's great to be on with you. It's darkjournalist.com is where someone can sign up for the newsletter. I'm also on YouTube. It's youtube.com/darkjournalist. and my shows are there. Or if somebody wants more content, they can also sign up at darkjournalist.com and become a member.
That's right. I highly recommend that everybody listening does that. If you really want to get some really brain-twisting stories, some things that make you really think deep about what's happening with this interdimensional stuff that Daniel talked about, his is the website to go to because so much of the stuff is so well documented. I really enjoy listening to his videos. Daniel, I want to thank you so much for coming on with me tonight. I want to thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to ask you these questions and talk about the space fence with Elena Freeland and also Catherine Austin Fitz. And I just want everybody to know that I consider this man to be a true patriot, and also he's a really, really good news person as far as getting your information from. So, Daniel, thanks so much for being on with me tonight. And we'll be going to break in just a minute, so I'm going to go ahead and close the rest of this segment out myself, if you don't mind, please.
Thanks, Ted.
Thanks, buddy. Guys, I want you to know something, that Daniel is probably one of the most brilliant journalists that I've ever listened to, and he does an excellent, excellent job as far as what he does and what he promotes. Now, I'm also going to say this. From a Genesis chapter 6 standpoint, we have to be aware of what's happening here from a Christian standpoint. We have to, because I know most of the people listening tonight are born-again believers. We've got to understand that these entities were here before the flood, and it says they were also here after the flood. And guys, now we're having to deal with them, and now we know they're here for sure, even from a scientific standpoint. So we've got to pay attention to these types of stories. God bless you guys. We'll be back in just a moment. Next guest will be the one and only Sheila Zaslinski, and we'll be talking about the NFL. It'll be a great segment.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smoke. Fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com. PreciousTimberProfits.com.